Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. And now, on to the show.
I'm very excited to introduce Shannon to you. Shannon is based in Melbourne, Australia, and has worked with an array of Australia's top companies to create websites, apps, and research projects over the last 9 years. For the last 2 years, her sole focus has been to make the internet a better place through accessible and user-friendly brands and websites through her self-named design business. We are so excited to have you here today, Shannon. Welcome.
So, hi, everyone. So, as Amber mentioned, I'm here to talk about how UX, UI, and accessibility are the perfect trio. So, what we'll be covering today is kind of going through how I would, when a client comes to me and is having some issues with their website, and what we can do to fix it. So, this includes how to implement UX practices in your own business and projects, the importance of asking questions, what data is useful for relationship between UX, UI, and accessibility, how to be a better advocate, and how UX can be applied to projects that aren't just web-based. So, Amber gave a very lovely introduction before, but yes, I'm Shannon Tao, like the beach towel, and I'm the experienced designer of your dreams. I'm the founder of my self-named design business and also a new business called Accessibility Clinic, which helps museums and cultural institutions become more accessible online and in person. So yeah, let's get stuck in. So what you will see on screen is, yes, it is Buzz, Woody, and Jessie from Toy Story. And here's how we represent UX, UI, and accessibility. So to me, Woody, perfect example of a UX designer. He loves to take charge, he's consistent to a fault, loyal to all the other toys, in this case, users, and yeah, just perfect, ask great questions. Whereas Buzz Lightyear, of course, is the UI guru with all of those like flashing buttons, the fancy uniform, looks fancy, was willing to adapt, like him readjusting to finding out he's a toy and not a real astronaut. Loves to pivot, interactive, and always optimistic. And that leaves us Jessie, who's the perfect embodiment of accessibility. The movies actually got better once she joined in, and she's great at problem solving, is a fierce friend and an invaluable part of the team. But all three of them together, perfect combination. And I'm going to show you exactly how that's the case. So we're looking at a sustainable toy company today called EcoJoy. Now, they did have a bricks and mortar store, but due to various circumstances, they've decided to pivot, let go of their in-person store and go purely online. Now, they've come to us because they're not getting the sales that they hoped for with their website. And so they don't really know what's wrong. And so they've come to us just for some advice. So how do UXers create a good experience? And on screen, there's a toolbox with a bunch of tools, and UXers have a lot of tools in our toolkit. And the number one in this particular client is a website audit. And so that's exactly what we're going to do. So on screen, you can see their website. We can scroll through, and at the top, it has the menu with home, shop, cart icon, the logo, and then just eco-friendly toys with a bunch of different products, and a contact form. So pretty average to bad website for a lot of reasons. And so we're going to point out exactly what we should be fixing And whilst I have created this horrible website, this is based on all the clients and past experience that I've gone through. So number one is, so on the side, there's a note with things to fix slash note, and we're going to go through each one. So the first one from bottom to top is the many order breaks convention. So people love patterns, and particularly in Western culture, we read left to right. And so having the menu out of order with the logo on the right-hand side is not the best convention and can kind of cause people to pause and not know where to click. And so doing it the more traditional way will be helpful in this instance. All right, and the second point is the color palette. So we are talking about a sustainable toy company here. The blue, particularly this shade of blue, doesn't really scream sustainable toy brand or really the logo. And so it is a darker blue. So not really one that you would see in nature at all, even the ocean, maybe like a stormy ocean. And so, yeah, the bright green is okay, but none of these really have the natural element. And so would probably ask if there was any way that they would consider a rebrand. The brand in general, it looks cheap and doesn't necessarily target what their demographic would be. Sustainable toy company, they're aimed at mums who are willing to pay a premium for like well-made toys. Whereas this logo doesn't really represent that. And that is because it was generated through one of those websites and took a second. And so something more polished would help resonate with their target audience. And the next point is inconsistent photography. So there are eight products on the page, and each one of them is different. And so this is something that I see a lot, mainly with service-based businesses, about an over-reliance on stock photography. And that can really kind of, it can shake people's trust. And yeah, particularly with e-commerce, they want to feel confident purchasing because it's not like they can go to a store anymore and see it in person. And so inconsistent photography, it kind of gives a bit of an Amazon feel. And with all these different styles, can they really trust that they will receive the product if they purchased it? It could give off a drop shipper. So an example here, and not just for this website, is if you are going to use stock photography, I personally advise people to keep it to a minimum. And if you can get your own photography, I would say it's essential for an e-commerce business. But yeah, if you are using stock photography, keep it minimal. And if you can, try and use it from the same collection so it looks in sync. But photography is one of those things where if you can invest in it, you do use it continually. And my own photos that I took 18 months ago have gotten a lot of use. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, the next one is nondescript product names. And so, you know, we are in a world where SEO names, they do a lot of heavy lifting, but you want people to, yet again, building that trust that they know what they will receive. And so some of the examples here we have are cutlery set, fake camera, law pad, truck, fire engine, tape scoot around, arch stacks, and then what looks like lorem ipsum, which is placeholder text. So if you were using a screen reader or even just looking, you can't really tell what they would be. Cutlery set, is it a play cutlery set? What's it made out of? Is it steel? Doesn't really make sense for a toy business, but using something that's a bit more intuitive can be really good and really help out in this case. The next point is the text size is too small. Now we can't really tell, no, we can't go in to inspect in this presentation, but when it comes to the products, there are some that are discounted and they have the retail price as a strike through next to it. These are very small. I would say it's probably 10 pixels. The web content accessibility guidelines, while there's no specific guide around text size, for my clients, I tend to not do anything below 18 pixels just to keep it really safe, clear, and legible. I have in the Y on the side said not to have text smaller than 16 pixels, but no, ideally don't use anything under 18. The only time where I'd really go below that is if it was an app design and the menu navigation. But yeah, avoiding that at all costs. Here we can also see the heading structure is incorrect. So headings are really important for websites, and if you don't know the purpose of them, there's H1 to H6 headings. Normally they stop at H4, but these are important not only for screen readers, but also SEO purposes. So just as we would scroll down a page and skim through, people using screen readers also do the same, but they instead use these headings to kind of jump around and find what is relevant to them. And so here we've got eco-friendly toys as a H1 because they are in order of importance. And so there's only ever one H1 per page. Well, that is best practice. And then it goes into H2. So an example here would be if H1 is universe, then H2 would be Earth. And then H3 would be, all the continents. And so, for example, North America. And then H4 could be going into Texas. And H5 would be a suburb of Texas. So all of them correlate into each other. And that's really important for SEO purposes and also screen readers. And so I have got an example on the right-hand side of where they've gone wrong here, and that is H2 has been missed. And so they've skipped from H1 to H3. The next one is color contrast issues. So this impacts UI, UX, and accessibility. So it, as you can see here, at the bottom of those eight products, there is pagination to go on to additional pages, but the contrast is really bad. The black text against a dark gray background means it is very difficult to read, even with someone that doesn't have vision problems. And so that's having it. So that impacts like the user experience, because if they can't read it, that's bad for them. Accessibility for the same reasons. And UI, you want effective UI choices. And so if people aren't able to read it, then that's not good. And yeah, for the contact us form, the placeholder text is also very difficult to read against the white as it's a light gray. So in this case, when it comes to people designing, there are numerous color contrast tools that you can use. And so I personally use Contrast Checker quite often. But I also have my own prototype tool on my website, and I can put it in the chat at the end of this presentation where you can check up to eight colors at a time. It does still need some work on it. So, but I will put that in for your own use as well. Next thing is inconsistent letter case use. And so, by this, a mix of sentence case, capital letters, and camel case. And so, when it comes to reading, having everything uppercase can be quite difficult for people to understand because it's all at the same level. And so, if you are going to use capital letters, keeping them to a minimum, but the best way that people can read content tends to be in sentence case. And so it has the capital at the start. Or if you are using, like for a business card, for example, having your website or Facebook group having camel case. And so that means every word having a capitalized first letter. And the next one for this website is inconsistent font usage. And some of them are not just inconsistent, they're really bad. And so if we look through here, we've got one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. We've got seven different fonts. One of them is a script font, which is very difficult to read. And so if you're having a lot of different fonts, that can also scream that, not to trust the website. And UI-wise, it can be difficult to yet again get people to build patterns. And so you want them to be able to see, your logo or a font and being like, yep, they are very on brand. And there's a few different ways that you can make sure that you're using accessible fonts as well. And so a good thing to check is called the mirror test. And so a lot of fonts just they tend to reflect the B and the D. And so it's the same letter just reversed. And that goes for P and Q. Another good one to look at is one, like the number one, an uppercase I and a lowercase L. If they all look the same, then that can really impact people who have dyslexia or other neurodiverse tendencies. And so, keeping an eye out for font usage, keeping them to a minimum. I personally don't tend to use more than three per site and a lot more of the time too.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. Thousands of businesses, nonprofits, universities, and government agencies around the world trust Accessibility Checker to help their teams find, fix, and prevent accessibility problems on an ongoing basis. New to accessibility? Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker is here to teach you every step of the way. Whether you're a content creator or a developer, our detailed documentation guides you through fixing accessibility issues. Never lose track of accessibility again with real-time scans each time you save, powerful reports inside the WordPress dashboard, and a front-end view to help you track down hard-to-find issues. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to Accessibility Checker Pro to scan your website in bulk, whether it has 10 pages or 10,000. Download Accessibility Checker today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code ACCESSIBILITYCRAFT to save 10% on any plan.
And the next one. So you will notice here a theme, inconsistent buttons. And so this is another thing that can impact UX. And also, accessibility in some instances. And so we have here that people can click on the products to go to assumedly another page which has all the details. The pagination, which is another type of button. And then we've got a send button for a contact us form. And then a join button for a newsletter subscription. And yeah, there is a lot going on here. So both of them are round, but one is blue with a script font, and the other one is bright orange with capitalization saying join. And so when it comes to buttons, there are a good use case for UX is each page having one primary action and then one secondary and at most one tertiary. And so kind of how we talked about the H1 to H6 headings, these also have importance and they don't necessarily correspond with SEO, but they help direct people's behavior on the site. So on this page, for example, it's a very poor homepage, but the number one thing that we'd want them to do outside of clicking on a product is probably contacting them. And so for a contact, you'd want this to be the primary. And so that could be the one that has color. And then a secondary one could be a secondary color. You'd tend to keep the same font for both and just use typically background color or even stroke to distinguish them. And one other thing to note about buttons is it's really important to adhere to the minimum touch size through WCAG. And so that is 44 by 44 pixels. And so that ensures if you're on mobile, that if you have clumsy thumbs, that you can click it with no problem. And yeah, so when I do design websites, the text inputs and buttons, I tend to have a minimum height of 44 pixels. I do tend to do larger, actually, normally between 48 and 52. And yeah, that skinnier button does not meet, in this instance, having the 44 pixels high. And the next one, so not an issue for most of the people on this meetup, but Americanized language. So this website is a company that's based in Melbourne, Victoria, here in Australia. And so it doesn't have very much Americanized language, but it does have cell phone. And yeah, so when it comes to particularly service-based businesses, if it is Americanized language, from an Australian point of view, it can be an indicator that ChatGPT has been used and not edited. And having things that are more localized, because I'm sure it's the same in the US. If you see color with a U, which you would have seen on my presentation, it's just something that attracts your eye and gives you pause. And so ensuring that all your content is localized to your area is important. And we're getting towards the end of a website audit, but the next thing is it has incorrect and out-of-date information on this page. So if we scroll down to the footer, as you will notice when we talked before jumping into the audit, they did have a bricks and mortar store, but through various reasons, they've decided to pivot to online only. And so they still have their address listed on their website. And so the incorrect and out-of-date information is yet again one of those things that can erode customer trust. And yeah, there's nothing else, but if you do have a website and you are doing offers that you no longer support, selling products that you no longer stock, just making sure that it keeps up to date, because people are on your website for the most up-to-date information. All right, and the next point is very specific to e-commerce, but on this homepage, there is no clear information about postage. Now, this can be a particularly big issue in Australia because if you try and purchase anything in America to send to Australia, so expensive. But it appears to be the same in the US as well. Like, people want to know how much postage is going to cost, if anything, and standard delivery times. And so when you're selling products online, sharing accurate information around that is a must. And that doesn't necessarily have to be on the homepage, but it has to be somewhere, ideally easily accessible. And the next one, and I see there's a lot of comments in the chat, which is great. I'm looking forward to seeing them all at the end of the presentation. The next thing is, there is so little information on this website in general. So as I discussed, it has product listings for 8 on the homepage, a contact form, and a newsletter sign-up form. And that's it. It has some contact information in their footer around like 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. with a phone number and an email, but nothing about the history of the business, about their mission for sustainable toys. And yeah, so this yet again makes it a riskier choice for customers. There's also no testimonials. And so, you'd come onto this website and be like, has anyone actually bought stuff off here before? And so you don't want to hit people over the head with information, but you need to give them something, even if they don't look at it, just peace of mind. And yes, and so the next one is, they are unable to tab through the website. And I know that this is a presentation and not a physical website, and so you'll have to take my word for it. This is not keyboard accessible. And so if you do use the tab key, it doesn't go, and that is also a good indicator that it is not screen reader friendly. And so the why on the right hand side. So using the keyboard to tab through a website can tell us a lot. So it can indicate whether they are focus states, whether those focus states are accessible, because given that it has a blue color palette here and a lot of default focus states are blue, it probably won't stand out as much as it should. It can be a quick indicator on how a screen reader interprets the site. It doesn't make up for testing it with a screen reader itself. And then the good thing is, and you would be able to, I assume in this instance, if it was accessible, can you access all the navigation through the keyboard? Because a lot of the time with menus, if they have secondary menus that are in a dropdown, tabbing through doesn't necessarily mean you can reach those lower levels of the navigation. And so that's something to keep in mind. And so gotten to the end of our audit. And so what have we learned? We've learned it is a terrible website, and there's numerous things that are preventing them from making the sales that they need. And so what do we do next?
Where do you live?
In the city.
Do you have a house?
Apartment.
Hopefully you can all hear this.
What do you do for a living?
Lots of things.
Where's your office?
I don't have one.
How come?
I don't need one.
Where's your wife?
Don't have one.
How come?
It's a long story.
Do you have kids?
No, I don't.
How come?
It's an even longer story.
Are you my dad's brother?
What's your record for consecutive questions asked?
38.
I'm your dad's brother, all right.
You have much more hair on your nose than my dad.
How nice of you to notice.
I'm a kid, that's my job.
Yeah, so I just played a clip from Uncle Buck, and now is the time for the UX designer hat to come out, and we're asking so many questions to the owner first. And so what should we be asking? And there's a list of questions on this that I will read out a few of them. So what are the goals of this website? There are some assumptions that we can make here, like making sales. Who is the target audience? What sets you apart from your competitors? Asking about specific business goals, if there's things they like about their website, if there's things that they don't. if they have a plan for updating the website and just seeing where it went wrong and keeping that address. Are there any integrations that they need? Since they're e-commerce, there's probably inventory management systems. They do have a newsletter by the looks of it. And then talking a bit more about what their overarching systems are. So how do they fulfill orders? What's the process in that? If there are returns and refunds, how are they handled? And then, of course, as we mentioned earlier, are they open to a rebrand? Because we tactfully mentioned that it may not be doing exactly what they need it to be doing. And so what do we do next? Hopefully we do have some answers for these, but there's also something else. If we can get it, it will make our jobs that much easier. And so here, there's a screenshot of Friends with Phoebe and Ross. She's grabbing him by the ear and saying, "Give me your money, punk." But money is not what we need here. Well, it could be, but what we're after is data. And so data is a UX designer's absolute best friend. And so I have a great quote, and I tell all my clients this: bury me in data, I will crawl out with what I need. And so on the right-hand side, you can see a woman at a desk, and she is literally buried in paperwork. There's a whole mountain behind her. And so what sort of data are we looking for, and where can we get it? And so there's a few good places to start. And so the first one, seeing as this is a website, is Google Analytics. And so Google Analytics is great if it is set up properly. And so what information can we find here? We can find out what pages people are viewing and for how long. We can view any customer demographic data. It can be limited at times. We can see how people are coming to your website, either through social media, email marketing, etc. Some of this is dependent on how Google Analytics is set up. But one of the key things you can see are bounce rates. If people are leaving the site quickly, that can be a great indicator that there are issues with the page loading, or they're not finding the information that they need. It is a blaring symbol, usually, that something is wrong. And site speeds in general. And so that can feed into bounce rates. And so the next one we can look at is specific website builder data. And because this is an e-commerce platform, we have WooCommerce, but others that you can look at are anything that has an e-commerce builder. So whether that's Shopify, you're selling through Squarespace. And here we can see some more specific data around purchases. And so cart abandonment, what people are searching for, if that is available, sales data, what people are ordering, their average spend, and customer retention. If you're making the sale, are they coming back? If they're not, is there stuff that we can do to improve that? Because the good thing about UX is, while we're looking at their website, UX isn't just a website problem. It can have far reaching into other things. And so, not that we want people in this case to make returns or get refunds, but how you manage that with your customers can turn that from an annoying experience into one where they come back or recommend you just through the way you handled it. And the next thing that we can look at, and this can be different for every business, is the business specific data. And this can be one of the most helpful types of data. And what we get here can depend on the business itself. So in this case, what we're looking for is, have they received any customer feedback? Ideally, they would have some of their customers from the brick and mortar days that are ordering online. they may be able to reach out to past customers and be like, hey, how are things going? Or they may have just received it and they got an email being like, hey, I can't order off your website because this is broken, or I don't know what I'm doing on there. Another one that's quite common, and this can be for service-based businesses as well, are common email and ch or chatbot inquiries. And so if you're getting the same question again and again, that's a really good indicator that you should be looking at your content on your website and seeing where you can place that, because they're obviously looking for answers around that particular topic, and it will save you the headache of answering those questions, but also it saves the headache of your clients and customers because they can just find that themselves. Any information about refunds and returns? Like, if they are getting those requests, then what do it involve? Are they specific products? Is it around size, quality, that sort of thing? And another thing which can be really helpful is employee thoughts. And so, are the employees or like even the founder noticing something that no, they're not? And so that can be on the website in this instance, and the processes around it when it comes to packing the orders. Are they arriving undamaged? Are they is leaving it all to a Thursday afternoon to pack up and send for the week? Is that the most optimal way for the employee? Just yeah, asking those questions. And this is just a small amount of data that we can get. This can, go into quite heavy detail. But for this case, this is what we're looking for. And so, what are some other ways to get more data? And here I've got six different ways that you can look into getting that. And this can change depending on the business, but this is a good place to start. So, workshops. And you can have workshops with, clients or customers. You can also have internal workshops with the businesses. And so, really asking those difficult questions and getting some information. And not all, whilst the website data was more quantitative, and so meaning the number of results, the things here can be more qualitative, meaning quality, that they are a bit harder to track, but they can be so much more valuable. We can do questionnaires. And so that can be through the website, by email, or in person, for example. And if people have ordered something like, oh, can you rate your experience 1 to 10, for example? That's a very common one. As a designer, we can do immersion exercises. And so this can be where you embed yourself in the business for a certain amount of time. So other projects that I've worked on, spoiler alert, and it'll be later on in the presentation, I did some work with a zoo here based in Melbourne. And so I spent a number of days on site talking to both visitors and also the staff. And so they can be really valuable because you're putting your immersing yourself in the business, and you can see things a bit more clearly. You can also do customer and employee interviews. And so these would tend to be one-on-one and just having a conversation and give them the opportunity to air their grievances and feedback with no judgment. What we can also do is a few advanced analytics on the website. And so these can include heat maps and click tracking. And this can show you how people are interacting with the website. So a heat map, as it suggests, it kind of follows the user's cursor on the website and being like, all right, well, when they first get on, they're wanting to click this. And yeah, it can tell you what they're looking for in particular. So that can give some really good data. And it's particularly useful when paired with some of the other information. And for e-commerce, this is one that's great for them that can be used for service-based industries as well, is card sorting and tree testing. And so if you have a long list of Fink, Walmart, they sell hundreds, thousands of products. And so their navigation needs to find a way of filtering those through. And so card sorting and tree testing would be a great indicator of that. And so they could be like, all right, we've got a scrunchie, and I'm literally holding up a scrunchie. How would you find that through a navigation? And so you could talk with people and it'd be like, all right, I would expect to go to hair accessories, and then it would be under that, or beauty, hair products, hair accessories. And yeah, so really, because navigating with those big websites can be quite an issue. And so getting input on that can be really beneficial. So we're going back to EcoJoy. And so what data have we found? And from Google Analytics, we've seen that 62% of their traffic comes from Instagram. And so this means that they're doing something good on Instagram because they're building enough interest for people coming to the website. And we can see the majority of site visitors are women who are aged 25 to 45, which makes sense considering the products that they sell. We can see from their WooCommerce data that 86 of customers abandoned their carts. Gift guide and wooden toys were the most searched terms. And this was in brackets if there was a search bar. There wasn't. Most sales occurred in November and December, which also makes sense given the Christmas rush. And the least amount of sales happened in February. And so here in Australia, school starts around February. And so probably parents are not wanting to buy toys at that time because they're busy buying school supplies. And so that's something to keep in mind. We can also see through their business data, so they don't have many returns, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're doing everything right. It could mean they're just not making those sales to begin with. And so if they're not making sales, they don't have return requests. They have a virtual assistant who is in charge of website updates, but she's not confident at making website changes. And EcoJoy also receives at least one message a month asking about their physical store because they still have that information on their website. So what do we do next? And on screen, what now? And so we've got here a, I think it's from Hot Wings, but he's from Community. I cannot remember his name, but it's a person being like, are we done? And the answer is no. So here's time for UX and UI to come together. We've got two people high-fiving with UX acting as UX and UI. And then we've got accessibility coming up from the bottom left corner and just acting as a supervisor. And so here on screen, we've got the existing EcoJoy brand. And I haven't gone into that much detail about it before, but I will do it now. So it has a woman with two smiley faces, kind of near her shoulder blades. They look like they could be joints, but they are meant to be her children, I assume. So that is in a light teal color. EcoJoy is in a semi-script font called Akaya Televergala. And it is camel case, so it has the capital E, C, O, capital J, O, Y, but it is not great. And at the bottom, we can see what colors are used, and it's pretty much a medium mid blue, white, and a light teal. And so teal, notorious for being horrible at color contrast. And so on the right-hand side, I've got a proposed what we're changing to. And so we've still got EcoJoy, but it's changed into a different font. And for the logo mark, we've got a wooden toy that kind of has holes in it. And so imagine those toys where you like, fit the square, fit the cube through the square hole, like that type of thing. It has a lot of greens and browns to more mimic the nature element. And so if we go on to the next slide, there's an expansion of what it is. And so there's a photo in the top right corner of kids playing with a wooden toy. It is Jenga in this instance, but they all look like they're having fun because Toy Store, you want people to look like they're having fun. And we've got some more leaf kind of illustrations just to show that it kind of lean into that natural element and what people would like to see. And we've also added an addition, we've changed all the fonts. And so we've all of them are, well, we've got a serif for the heading. No, they're all sans serifs, sorry. And so let's move on to the next one. And so here is their new site. And in my opinion, miles better. And so I will go through and say how we've changed it. So at the very top, we've got a banner saying free shipping over $150 Australia wide, because this is an Australian business. We've got a in the navigation, we've got the shop, blog, contact page, cart, and then a search bar. And as we go down, we've got a header saying play today, protect tomorrow. Crafting smiles with every toy made for learning, fun, and growth. And so really, again, highlighting that natural, sustainable element of their products. And we've got a smiling kid. So we scroll down, we've got some filtering available. So search by collection. Now there is the opportunity to view all toys, but we've got they can search by play sets, control toys, educational toys, eco-friendly toys, and stuffed toys. And there's matching iconography for each. And this is the homepage. And so you can already see that this would be really expanded if they go onto it. We've got another section, top picks for your little ones, with a featured bestsellers and new arrivals filtering option. All of the images are on a white background. I would still say they're a little bit basic, because a site like this would be quite curated, but a vast improvement on the last one. And so from here, we have very clear indicator of what's on sale. We've also got ratings, and so we can see which is the most rated. And so the first one is 5 stars. I've also noticed that it still has got some placeholder text, but that's my bad, not on the website. And from this homepage, you can quick add to cart or add it as a favorites to like a watch list or something, wish list, sorry. If we scroll down again, we've got 2 sections. So back to school, we've got, we got that data saying that with the back to in February that sales were low, and so this was an encouragement to get those sales up and running. So 30% off until it says the 12th of November, but this should be 12th of March. That is on me. Use code BTS30 at checkout, and then you can shop now. And then because gift guide was heavily searched, we've got help Let us help you find the perfect gift. Check out our gift guide. And then we also have the ability to search by age because, you know, if people don't have kids, they may not know what is appropriate for each one. And so you can search from 0 to 1, 1 to 3, 3 to 5, 5 to 8 years old, and then 8 years plus. And we've got testimonials, and which also builds that trust. And you know, other people who have bought from here really enjoy it. So I feel confident that I can also purchase from here. And then, yeah, some other images which have, these can either be user generated. And so people that, you know, they've taken photos of their kids and sent them through, I would say unlikely in this case, or just, yeah, other product photography showing how it's being interacted with. And then, you know, we've got a highlighted section like customer care. Do you have a 24-hour follow-up? Free shipping for orders $150 and up, and return within 7 days. And so, yet again, not hiding that information, showing it. And then more of an incentive to join the mailing list. And so get 15% off your first purchase. Be the first to know about sales, new product launches, and exclusive offers. And so yet again, building that mailing list, which they can use for other marketing opportunities. And then a footer, which is, it doesn't have the address on it. It has my account with like track my order, terms of use, wish list, submit your feedback, and then some customer service information. And so Monday to Friday, 10 to 6, call us, email us, with some social media tiles. And so as you can see, a lot better. And all of that, the questions that we asked, the data that we received, all of that fed into what is a lot more effective website. But is UX just for websites? No. And so I've worked in previously in the museum space, and you know, think anything fun and interactive that you did in a museum, I helped develop those experiences, both how they looked and how they felt. And so I have a few on screen, like animated examples. So the Map-O-Matic on the left, which you know, you could choose 2 objects from a collection, press a button, and it would do a 6 degrees of separation map between them. Hello Zoo in the middle, which you could ask the speaker box any question about a corroboree frog, which is a native Australian frog, and you would get an answer. So it acted as a digital zookeeper. And then on the right-hand side, Dinos at the Zoo. And so this was a booth, and you had a NFC-enabled lanyard, which you could tap, and then it would give you a dinosaur fact, as these were right next to real-life scaled animatronic dinosaurs. And you can see on screen is the in-person example of his dinosaur with the booth. And so this is an iguanodon. And yeah, this was is the Holocaust Museum here in Melbourne. And you can look into these little windows and see a family going about their, you know, how they dealt with World War II and how they had to leave their homes and go into hiding. But this is the thing that I wanted to say a bit more example, because all of these projects have a lot of UX embedded in them. And this is just an example of how you could use it for any of your projects. And as I mentioned, EcoJoy, we were looking at stuff far past the website. And so, you know, looking at their returns process, how they pack orders, how they deal with customers. And so on screen, this was I will go back and replay it. This is an experience called A Day at the Races. And so this is an interactive experience about horse racing here in Melbourne. And so visitors could color in a horse template. They would put it into a booth. They could name it. And then that horse would go onto the big screen and could race against other visitors' horses. And so this had a lot of UX in it. And this just to show goes to show how far reaching some of the UX elements can be. And so here we've got the template on the left-hand side. And so it has a date to races, quit stalling and color in, harness your creativity. And then on the bottom left, we have a horseshoe in a square. Now this looks like it could just be a fun little thing. This served a very important point. So when you put it into the booth, which scanned it and you could name it, it could be slightly off. And so the square with the horseshoe was a way to just ensure the computer could programmatically align it each time. And so the design would actually go onto the horse. On the right-hand side, we have a few different test examples of how to color it in. And so we tried a few different materials. And so we've got marker, pencil, two pencils, and a crayon, because we needed to test both the speed of coloring in, because there was a lot of school groups that went through here. And so speed was imperative, but also how easily this stuff could be cleaned off furniture. And so we went for crayon for that reason. And speed was also one of the reasons why, instead of having an A4 sheet of paper, we went for A5. And so this meant it was easier to color in. It meant that they could print them on site, less paper waste. And yeah, it was just all good all around. So through asking those questions and really looking at how people would be using it, our needs from a technology point of view, it made it a lot easier. And we wanted them to keep the template ideally. And so that's why a lot of effort went into the design. We did a lot of testing for this project. And so there's a few things happening on the screen. So on the left-hand side, there is a timing test. And so this goes on to, how long we needed to scan it, how long we were going to give them to name it, all of that, because once we had that data, then we could work out, okay, how often are we having a race? Because you don't want people to be standing around for too long, and you also want to make it worth it. And so we were able to determine that having a race occur every 3 minutes was a good sweet spot. It meant that we could have 6 horses in that time, because there was 2 booths that people could use to scan and get them in. We also had a test of the end winning screen, and so the horse bucking up in the air in celebration, and yeah, showing just some of the tech testing and so how the horses would race around the track. And some of the more standard accessibility testing and also non-standard. So on the right, you can see how I went in and looked at all the color contrast against everything, because we needed to make some adjustments earlier on, because it did pass WCAG AA for large text, but yeah, there was some a bit of adjusting to do for that with Illustrator. But on the right-hand side, this is the winning screen, but the horse design has kind of a radial gradient. This is what happens if you put a set of keys into the booth, because you're always wanting to kind of troubleshoot and be like, all right, if I was a kid who was 8, what would I find funny? And so working out, okay, well, what does happen if we do the wrong thing? And there was also some issues around moderating. We had we had really large moderating on this project. And so if people were to draw a swear word or a penis, how would we deal with that? Now, all of these horses would only be on screen for a maximum of 3 minutes, which was a blessing, but it also meant that, okay, well, what happens? We don't want to reward people for doing the wrong thing. And we also don't want them to think that the experience is broken. And so if they did do something like draw a penis, it would just come in as white. And so it would strip all of the color away. And yeah, but even through testing, there was some things that slipped through the cracks. You know, we did testing with a school group and one of them wrote the N word and that filtered through, and a swastika. All of that was, you know, added to the moderation. But yeah, that shows the importance of testing as well. So, you know, we're getting towards the end of our presentation here. But in summary, so what have we learned? So when you're doing your project, a good thing is to ask a bunch of questions. Like, even if you don't think it's relevant, just, you know, it can sometimes be a really good, you know, it can help you get close to the information that you need and just get them to open up. Use data where possible to find insights, validate decisions, and eradicate assumptions. You talk to the people you use the product, and this doesn't just include your clients or customers. Talk to the employees and business owners. And keep an eye out for other opportunities, even if they're not their original priority. I've said this before, and I'll say it again, this is the beauty of UX. It just, and accessibility, it doesn't just stop at websites. There's so much you can do above and beyond that. And so, you know, as a designer, I'm always looking out for ways I can go above and beyond for my client and just be like, hey, have you considered doing it this way? And a lot of the time they haven't, and that's what makes you so much more valuable. And iteration is a natural part of design. It's okay to change things. Try to make sure you have all of the information needed to do so. But at the end of the day, it doesn't tend to be life and death, but if there's anything that you can do that benefits accessibility or UX, it's a pretty good reason for me. And so, yeah, we're getting towards the end. And so here I've got a copy of Make It Stick. Now, it doesn't really go to UX and UI, but it is about branding. And so you can grab your copy of Make It Stick, the Memorable Brand Toolkit. There is a QR code in the bottom left corner, and I will put the URL in as well. I will give you a few moments to do that, but yeah, about ready to take any questions. And I see that there's a lot.
Thank you so much. Let me see if I can find myself again here. Real quick, before you stop sharing, do you want to flip to your last slide and just share your contact information as well?
Sure. Yeah, so you can find me. There is a QR code in the bottom right corner to go to my website. And yeah, you can find me at shannontowell.design, shannontowell.design. But I will put all of this information in the chat as well, unless Paul has already done that.
Yep, she is amazing like that.
Thank you.
Great. I am going to work through the questions in the Q&A. You do have the ability to upvote them. So if you see one that you like, I will kind of go in that order. Otherwise, I'm just going to go top to bottom. But so for everyone, please put any questions in the Q&A. And if you want to upvote, you feel free to do that. The first question that we got kind of early on, I think when you were talking about the different button styles and things like that, was someone was wondering if you could speak about potential accessibility considerations when choosing to use buttons versus hyperlinks. So like links that are styled as buttons, They said I see a lot of websites and digital marketing agencies push for lots of button usage to grab attention. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so ideally, from my point of view, you don't really want to overwhelm people with a lot of buttons or links in general. Like, you want to make sure they're purposeful. So, I find with my clients that using buttons is a good way to get them to understand that, because if you just see, well, it goes with hyperlinks as well. If you see like 20 buttons on a page or 20 hyperlinks is way too much. And so reducing it. And so I try and keep, unless on that, like in this case, it's an e-commerce site. And so there's a lot of buttons to more product information, but keeping it to, I would say like 2 to 3 actions per page. There's sometimes where you can have like a repeated button. On some of my package pages, I have, have information about it and be like, yep, I want to buy it, or for example, and then have that a few other times during the page. But yeah, it really just depends. Buttons can give a lot more a visual impact, and just using that where it makes sense. Whereas hyperlinks, it might make more sense like within a paragraph and like you're referring to another organization, for example. They both have their place. It just really depends on the content.
Yeah. I mean, I think in your good example for EcoJoy, one of the things is there, like I'm thinking about the different ways of searching. And those were all styled like links, which I think makes sense because that's what they were. But they also had an icon or a small photograph or something with them to make them stand out. And I feel like from a design standpoint, it's helpful to balance that because if you just style everything like a button, then it becomes overwhelming, and maybe people also get desensitized to the buttons.
And that's another thing that's really important, like styling them slightly different and like one for primary, one for secondary, and so being really strategic with what you want them to do on the page, because if you just have 8 buttons or like even 3 buttons that all look the same, you're not really giving any of them focus. And so if they all look the same, people like I don't really know what to pick, and yet again giving them pause, where a lot of UX is just directing them to kind of what will help them, but also what you want them to do.
So there's a question, how receptive are your clients to UX, UI, and accessibility up front, or does it take a lot of convincing to bring them on board to certain things?
It kind of depends. I am fortunate that I've been marketing myself in this space for quite a while, and so I'm starting to get more clients that come to me specifically for this stuff. But I do joke around that UX and accessibility are kind of Trojan horse offerings of mine, even if I'm quite clear on all of my collateral, but they come to me because they like what I design, and it's like, well, if you're working with me, I have a very, a lot higher standard of accessibility and UX, and like we're gonna do it right, and I make sure my price point reflects that. And so they're getting that, even if they don't necessarily think they need it. It's just, it's by default with me.
I love that description that it's like a Trojan horse service. It makes me think about we have a few of our like legacy marketing customers that I do accessibility work on their really old websites for SEO reasons. So we'll go through and we'll be like, we're going to go through and fix all of the headings that are out of order because guess what? Google PageSpeed flags this now. Or like Google PageSpeed flags if you have ambiguous links. So you can be like, this is an SEO fix. It's an accessibility fix. I mean, it's both, right? But
And that is an argument that I use sometimes as well, because I don't think it's usually malicious, just a lot of people don't know what they don't know. And so for some clients, it can be an easier sell just being like, hey, this will help you get more eyeballs on your site.
Yeah. And I would say for anyone who wants to know more about this, definitely come to the panel discussion next month, because we're going to be talking a lot about that. Let's see. There was a question that says, I've always seen a connection between user experience, UX, UI, and accessibility practices. In your circles or communities, are there a lot of others doing what you do? Are you alone in talking about these three areas together?
I will say that it's starting to become more popular, but I've been doing this in Australia. I've been freelancing and like working for myself for the past 2 years, but even in full-time positions, I was always trying to enhance the accessibility for stuff, and so I have been doing it a while, but it's still so new. And yeah, I ever since like learning a bit more about accessibility, like if 4 or 5 years ago, it just seemed like a natural extension of UX, and I really love UX, and so it just made more sense to like focus on that. But yeah, I would love to see more people in this space because yeah, there's not enough.
Did you have a tool that you recommend for tracking links or sorry, clicks and heat mapping?
No, I haven't used it too much myself just because a lot of my clients honestly don't have the budget for it. But yeah, I have used them previously in other roles, but that's quite a few years ago now, and I'm sure that there are better ones available. So I'm sorry, don't have any recommendations off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can answer what we do. So we use Hotjar. It is more expensive, I have found there's Microsoft Clarity also is a free option. But what I don't like as much about Clarity is their screen recording. When it actually records, it doesn't always start at the beginning, and so you don't get a full user journey all the time. So usually we'll end up using Hotjar, but we'll just do like a month because you can pay for a month. So we'll do a month on a really big plan. And then usually you get enough data unless the website's really low traffic. That's what we do. But let me see. So on the note of data, do your clients want to see the data? Pre and post launch, or do you use it more to stress the importance of accessibility, your ideas, or other, like how much do you share with them or go over with them?
Kind of both, because a lot of the time you're relying on them to actually get you some of the data, particularly if you're using that to craft an argument before you're designing a new approach to them or like suggesting moving in a different direction. But yeah, I usually set up Google Analytics for them if they don't have it beforehand for websites, just because so they can keep track of it. And like if they never look at it, then that's fine, but it's fair if they need it. And so I think data can be so powerful, and I don't really see the need in gatekeeping it. And if it's not working as we'd intended, then it's just like, hey, by noticing people aren't really going on this page, and so let's figure out what's stopping them. And so it can lead to more work. So yeah, I share it with them where possible.
Yeah, I don't know if you've had this experience, but an experience we've had is if it's a really big company, then they or universities, people who work at universities, they like really like the data and they'll like, you can send them a spreadsheet or a PDF report or something and they will like go through it on their own and like analyze it and all that stuff. But then what I found with like small businesses or even medium-sized organizations, a lot of times, you have to get on a call with them and like walk them through the data. You can't just be like, here's what I found, here's a summary, and here's the thing you can go read. Like they really need you to walk them through it and talk about implications. And then even if you set up like some sort of regular automated report, they'll never open it. I don't know if you've had that
Yeah.
experience.
A little bit. But I kind of use that as a UX exercise as well. And so with my website audits, I tend to go page by page, and one of the first ones I did, there was like over 300 notes, because I go onto like each page and like call out specific things, whether it's a UX issue, a content issue, a developer issue. But that's really overwhelming for like pretty much every company. And so I have that, and that is available to them, but I also do consolidated presentation, being like, hey, there's a lot of stuff we found, but these are the things that need immediate attention, high attention, medium, or like low attention, and just, kind of give them a summary in that way.
So Frank had asked, Frank said he doesn't really like WooCommerce. Is there an accessible shopping cart that can work with WordPress? He says, years ago, I used ECW ID, but I'm not happy with their performance, and I have no idea what ECW ID is. I don't know if you do.
No, arguably I don't do that much e-commerce. It was a very easy example to like talk through some of this stuff in this presentation. I do tend to use Shopify more often than WooCommerce. And yeah, whilst some of that accessibility, I try and do my best. Yeah, if you do find one that's like a lot more accessible on any platform, let me know.
So I will say that we've actually been auditing WooCommerce, and they have fixed all of the issues that we found, and we're in the process of doing retests. There's a few, I think, that are going to come out in a release in May, but their goal is to be WCAG AA conformant by the
Amazing.
European Accessibility Act deadline in June. So from an accessibility standpoint, WooCommerce, I know, is putting a lot of effort in. That would be where I have most of my experience. And I have only barely looked at like Shopify or other things like that. So I can't speak much to it. So Nicholas said, for accessibility, what kind of elements would you use for users that cannot read or have mental disabilities on an app or a website?
Yeah, that's like an interesting one. I haven't really experienced like having ones that can't read in general, but I do try and keep things to quiet, simplified language. I have seen other websites that use like a talk aloud function, mainly universities. But yeah, I'm not sure if it's like a good answer, but I'm not really too sure on that specific one. Sorry.
I think you're touching on what I would touch on, which is you definitely want to make sure your reading level is not too high. If you're targeting people that have lower reading levels or lower cognitive abilities, maybe even relying a lot more on headings to separate things, or like bulleted lists instead of long paragraphs might be helpful too. Like anything that makes it easier to skim probably would make it easier to read. And then I don't know, it's hard with other differences. What might be useful, Nicholas, is there it was a talk at WordPress Accessibility Day conference, and Paula is a wizard at finding links. But last year, on the 2024 site, if you go to 2024.wpaccessibility.day, I think you can find a recording, and I think there was a talk about neurological differences and accessibility for them, and that might be a good resource. I can't remember if we've had anyone at Meetup speak about it, but
That'd be a good addition.
it would be. I'll have to go back and look and see. I know we had a talk once about epilepsy, which was kind of interesting. So, but definitely check out the WordPress accessibility. Oh, look, and she found it. So I would definitely recommend that. Those were the last of our questions. Someone did ask if this was being recorded and if it'll be put up. And yes, it will. It'll take us about 2 weeks to do. But thank you so much for coming, Shannon, and speaking. I will say, I don't know if you were able to see all of the conversation in the chat, but lots of people really appreciated your presentation style. Someone thanked you for all of the great image descriptions that you gave of all the slides. Let's see, I'm trying to see what else. Kira said, I love the pace of your speaking, how descriptive you were. So thank you so much.
Okay, great. I'm gonna save the chat and read it all later.
Awesome. Well, I hope you have a wonderful day. And for all of our folks here in the US, have a wonderful evening. And we'll see you guys back here next week for a May meetup.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.